Well, hello everyone. Good morning. As Tom said, I'm Rachel Owen and I'm at South Dakota State University. Today I'll be talking about spatial variability of saline and sodic soil characteristics in South Dakota, USA, which is part of the Northern Great Plains region. Before I get started, I'd like to thank my co-authors and advisors, Dr. Doug Malo, Dr. Tom DeSutter, Dr. Cheryl Reese, Dr. David Clay, Dr. Greg Carlson, Dr. Sandeep Kumar, and Dr. Sharon Clay. So for this presentation, I'll go over a brief background of the salinity and sodicity problems that we have in South Dakota, and then go over the objectives of this project, go through the methods and results from our spatial analysis, and then discuss what that means for the future of our project. So in South Dakota, we have a crustaceous marine shale that is underneath glacial till. And so we've traditionally had problems with saline seep areas and groundwater salinity around wetlands. But more recently, we've started having more widespread issues. So these typically take place in the lower areas of landscape. And there are several research projects being done on why we have an increase, but there's been increased precipitation in the last 20 years, which has led to the groundwater raising. Coupled with changes in management practices in our region, we've had just more water in our soils that's caused more salts to stay near the surface. So these two graphics on your right, here in the James River Valley, which is in eastern South Dakota, in four of our main agricultural counties, we can have up to 33% of the arable land in that county affected by salt. And that leads to overall a $26.4 million loss in crops each year in just these four counties in eastern South Dakota. So here shows a map of the extent of the salinity problems, where the darker colors indicate more salts present. What we're primarily interested in is eastern South Dakota, and that's mainly due because of the agricultural production taking place in that side of the state. The western side of South Dakota is more semi-arid, arid landscape salinity, which is why we are focusing on the groundwater salinity in the eastern side of the state. In addition, the sodic soil map looks about the same. So in eastern South Dakota, we have those red counties there, which indicate 20 to 30% of the arable land is affected by sodic soils, and it shows clay pan soils, which have traditionally been associated with sodium in our region. So the objectives of this study were simply to try to identify a method to accurately model these saline sodic soil properties on field scale, and then once we identify a model that works to characterize them, then to just generally look at how the saline and sodic soil properties are distributed across the landscape. So for our saline sodic soil project, we have several sites, but my research has been focused in Pierrepont, South Dakota, indicated by the arrow there. It's a glacial till parent material, and about 10 to 20% of his field is affected by salt problems. So here's a soil map of the field, and one thing that we noticed, and we've been noticing, is that the saline sodic areas, so here the white spots on the map, do not line up with the soil survey units, and so it's hard for us to just go out and use soil survey to predict where these salts are going to show up. So we looked across this entire field. 5% of this field is mapped as a natristol, so it should be a sodium-affected soil, but we see it more widely spread across the field than just those 5 acres, or if that 5%. So for my samples, I collected grid point samples at a 62 by 62 meter grid to mimic a 1 acre grid across the field. And then we also collected rose samples, and we call them rose because they are in the shape of a compass rose. So we went out in 8 different directions at varying distances from a center point in order to try to accurately map how these salts were distributed across the landscape. We collected samples at 4 different depths, and the grid points that are shown here are the ones that had a complete set of data, and these were the ones that went into my calculation. So in total, there were 204 points, and all of the spatial analysis was done using ArcMap, the geospatial analyst tool set. For the lab methods, for all of the samples, we calculated electrical conductivity, the soluble cations, and SAR using a saturated paste extraction. And this is what we ended up with our data for our data distribution. So you can see they're both highly skewed. So electrical conductivity ranged from very, very low, near zero, all the way up to 42 in the hotspots. And the sodium adsorption ratio ranged from 0 up to 42 as well. So one note about how the data is distributed, because it was distributed as such, the spatial models that we had to choose our spatial models because of the hotspot characteristics of these saline sodic soils. So the first thing we did was we looked at a Moran's I value, which it will tell us how spatially correlated our properties were. And so if the closer the value is to 1, the more positively correlated the characteristics are, or the more clustered they would be. And so our electroconductivity has relatively high values, whereas our SAR has fairly low Moran's I values. And so we would expect that our spatial models would be better suited for electroconductivity rather than sodium adsorption ratio. So then next we use two different models in order to map the soils across the landscape. So inverse distance weighting, which would normally be used on the less spatially correlated data for SAR in this case. And we can see that for SAR, the inverse distance weighting worked better than the Kriging model in the top three soil horizons that we chose. And then the other model we chose was Kriging, ordinary Kriging, and this would be better suited for data that was more spatially correlated. And so with our EC, we only found that it was significantly better at reducing error in the 15 to 30 centimeter depth. And so I'll be looking at those four maps here in the next couple slides. So this is the electroconductivity map from 15 to 30 centimeters. And notice that in this map, the orange color there that's distributed across half of the field is greater than 4 decisiemens per meter. And typically that would be considered a saline soil and should affect the crop growth, but we don't see the crop growth affected in that entire half of the field. And so even though it had a fairly good error and a fairly good R squared at predicting the values, it's still probably not the best model to use in predicting the electrical conductivity. For sodium adsorption ratio, this shows the top three depths that we collected. And the main thing I wanted to point out on this one is you can see sort of how these salts are distributed with depth based on these maps. So in the first one at the surface on the left, we have a much larger area that is a higher sodium adsorption ratio, then when you move down to the lower depth here on the end, you have a very small area of impact. So the general conclusions that we made based on this data, and it's still in progress, but in most cases, interpolation should probably not be used in order to predict these soil salt distributions across the landscape. And so it might be better fit to go in and specifically analyze the hot spots in the field. So the salts are too spatially variable in order for the models to fit. And also we found that the best fitting model varies with the depth and with the parameter that we're looking at. One other thing to note is that there's been a lot of work done where they use the electroconductivity to predict the SAR, and we found that the electroconductivity and SAR are not always correlated, and so both sodium and EC should be collected in order to accurately see how the salts are distributed in our region. And finally, producers shouldn't rely on grid sampling to characterize their saline and sodic soils, so a more specific management approach would be better. So in the future, we're planning to take this data and apply it to another site that we had in Redfield, South Dakota. So we'll essentially look at the same models and see if we could get the same results at that location. We're also going to try to analyze for predictors of soil salt variability, and so we're looking at, we'll be looking at elevation and then some other data that the NRCS has helped us collect on those fields. And then finally, we'd like to be able to develop a relationship with yield data so that growers in our region can look at their yield maps and the saline sodic properties and be able to better manage those areas in the future. And with that, I'd like to thank the funding sources of this project and the grower cooperators who we worked with, and then also all the lab technicians and help that we've had along the way. This, it's a corn-soybean rotation.
Okay, so, when you're saying the crop was affected by the EC at the level, I don't remember which EC you said it. There was no crop. I mean, that's a function of the crop and salt tolerance.
Yes, that would be correct. So, this field is farmed corn and soybean rotation. The year that I collected the samples, it was just coming out of soybeans when I collected them last fall. But both of those crops would be typically affected by a greater than 4 dust Siemens per meter electroconductivity.
Yes. Wouldn't have to help you to map your soticity, but have you compared any of this to the EM38 mapping and how that agreed or didn't agree?
Yes, so that's one of the next steps in the project is we'll be looking at, we collected EM38 data, and we'll also be collecting various CART data to be able to see if we can correlate that with the grid point samples.
How did you choose your sites for roses?
So the two roses that we picked out in that field, we actually have 4 total, but I only looked at 2 of them. One is in a very poor area of the field where the salts are visible on the surface most of the time, and then the other one is in a good soil, one that wouldn't be typically salt affected.
And the models broke down in those areas too?
We didn't look specifically at those areas. Those areas were the ones that the model was probably best suited for, and we had samples closer together. You would expect that the model would work better in those areas, but I didn't actually break it down and look at those areas by themselves.
Do you have any idea what the
I do not know.
It's mostly more of a grid sampling and cell sampling approaches, of course. But not all growers, they have a lot of yield data, but they don't have a sidewalk soil data to help that along.
Right, yeah. General soil testing would be grid sampling.
But would it be possible to use long-term yield data to predict where these sites might be and create polygons?
That's actually part of our plan is we're trying to collect long-term yield data from the growers who we're working with and then looking at the mean and standard deviation of those yield maps in certain areas, correlate that with the saline and sodic soil properties.
It's always good to have 2 variables when you do that kind of management, either yield or maybe yield 30 or barrels, and not just yield. Any other questions for our speaker? I want to make a comment. Oh, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I need to be educated on something here. There was a question just before on using, what is it, EM38. What is that?
I am by no means an expert, but it essentially measures the apparent electrical conductivity. So it's something that you can just take across the field, and it's, you can get a measurement directly in the field to measure the electroconductivity, and then you can correlate it with actual soil data to make sure that it's to see what it's measuring. So.
It uses electromagnetic.
Yeah.
It's quite handy.
Yes. Yeah. Much quicker than saturated paste. And Varis as well would be another quick way to measure EC across the field.
Well, with that, we'll stop. So thank you.